Welcome to the Texas Crimecast by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Sarah Mirvash. Now, usually on our show, we bring you stories about some of the most heinous crimes in Dallas: murder, sexual assault, arson. But today on our program, we're going to be talking about a less serious crime in terms of punishment, but something that's very important to many people who live in Dallas, particularly those who live south of I-30, and that's the loose dog problem. Now, if you don't live in southern Dallas, you haven't been paying attention to the news, you might wonder, what dog problem? Well, we're here to tell you. I'm here in the studio with some very special guests. Sharon Grigsby, who is an editorial board of the Dallas Morning News and has been sharing her opinion on the dog problem for going on 2 years now.
Hi, Sarah.
And we're also here with Peter Brodsky, a businessman who the mayor has appointed to lead the city's Animal Advisory Commission.
Hi, Sarah.
And Stephanie Timko is also here in studio. She's an animal rights activist.
Good morning, Sarah.
And joining us on the phone is Dallas City Councilwoman Tiffany Young of District 7. Hey, Tiffany, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, thank you all for joining us. Dallas has been struggling with a sea of loose dogs for some time now, and we'll get into why that is shortly. But the problem became an urgent priority last month after a woman was killed by a pack of dogs. Her name was Antoinette Brown. She was 52, an Army veteran struggling with homelessness, a mother, a grandmother, a daughter. She was attacked so badly that she lost chunks of skin. She was bitten so many times that her doctor stopped counting at 100 bites. And she ended up in a coma, eventually dying of her injuries. So just to set the tone for what we're going to be talking about today, let's listen to a portion of that 911 call. The clip's about a minute long.
Dallas 911, this is Sonia. What's your emergency?
I'm calling because this woman been out here somewhere. I looked out there, but I'm kind of scared. I can't find her. But now she's out there begging for somebody to help her. I know some dogs was out there, and somebody came and ran them off. But she's still out there moaning and groaning, and I'm scared to go out there.
Okay. Can I have the address where she's at or the location?
She's right here on Ruffles off of Drunk. Exactly where, I don't know, but I can actually hear her from in my house begging for somebody to help her.
Can you see her, ma'am, or do you just hear her?
Ma'am?
Can you see her, or do you just hear her?
I just hear her. I went out there, but I was scared to go too fast, so I don't know where she's not. She wasn't in front of the house. I don't know if she's on the side or what. Somebody help me, somebody help me. She's been doing it for the longest, and moaning and groaning, and if something happened to her, I would feel bad if I didn't call y'all for y'all to come out here and check it out.
So we're sitting here in the studio listening to that, and I can see everyone's reactions, shaking their heads, sort of closing their eyes, and it's hard to listen to. Tiffany, you're on the phone. We can't see your reaction, but I know that you had a very strong reaction after Miss Brown, who lives in your district, it happened in your district after she was killed and hurt. So what was your response after you found out about what happened, and specifically hearing that 911 call that was released just recently?
I will tell you, it was jarring to hear the 911 call. It really takes you through a full gamut of emotion. To see the loose dog problem on a day-to-day basis in the community and then to have to deal with a situation like this, it really takes you from anger to disappointment. Just a full range of emotion.
And Stephanie, I saw you sort of closing your eyes and shaking your head. How was that for you to listen to as an animal rights activist, as someone who has really been going into the animal abuse of animals, but also to see how the impact has been on people and on a human life?
You know, it's interesting. When I first heard about this story, I was out of town and my husband told me about it, and I started following what was going on. And I kind of had as an animal rights activist and always having very positive experiences with dogs, it was sort of an abstract thing for me. And I felt a lot of compassion. I completely understood the position of the city to pick up the dogs. I support that position, but with a lot of fear about, you know, as an activist, oh, all dogs are savable. Well, not all dogs are savable. One of the things, you know, and it's so ironic that just 2 weeks ago I was in the field working rescue, and I actually was lunged at by a dog and had to be saved by one of my fellow rescuers. And the intense fear that I felt at that time was completely overwhelming, and I shut down. And that had never happened to me before, and it gave me a completely different experience of completely different understanding of what Miss Brown must have been feeling, and it just completely breaks my heart. to think about it.
Right. And there are dozens and dozens of, and actually thousands of people who are bit by dogs each year in Dallas. And they range from, you know, I talked to a 13-year-old boy who had his legs were all bit up. He had been attacked by a dog. I talked to a woman, a middle-aged woman, who was holding her Yorkie up in the air because some pit bulls were trying to attack her little, like, 7-pound Yorkie. Everyone has stitches, and they're very scared. And so even if they don't end in death, it's still very scary. Peter, after Miss Brown died, you guys had your animal commission meeting, a regular meeting, but it took a little bit of a different tone than it usually did. You had a moment of silence for her. How did her death change the city's response to the dog problem?
Well, her death was horrifying, and I wanted to make sure in that meeting that the commission and the public and the city never lost sight of the fact that a human being was killed in a horrible, painful, slow way. And for that really to ground the conversation, because the animal activist community and animal advocate community is one in which passions really run high. And people have very strong opinions. They feel it's a very emotional topic because we're dealing with human and animal lives, and that can quickly become politicized. It can become factionalized, and I really wanted to make sure that everybody stayed focused on what was most important. The other thing, and so I think it I hate to say it offered an opportunity because nobody needs that kind of opportunity, but with that kind of tragedy, it does focus attention, and it does give one the opportunity to try to cut through the politics. But I will say that long before Antoinette Brown was killed, this has been a major issue. And it may take people who don't live with the problem, may take a death for them to understand how bad it is. But if you're living in that community, and it's many communities, where you're afraid for your children to play in the front yard, the parks are not usable, you're afraid to walk to school, to walk to work, you don't have free rein of your community, and you're afraid, and you're walking around with sticks. Or there was an article, there was a TV news clip last night about a woman who had to throw food to get dogs away from. She didn't have lunch that day, probably because she had to throw her lunch at the dog so she could pass by the street. It is a huge plague in their lives. And so it's horrible that it took a death to focus people's attention. But, you know, I'm going to be damned if I'm going to let this opportunity go by to focus people's attention. And that was the goal for that meeting. And I think everyone on this podcast, led by Councilwoman Young, is really trying to make sure that attention stays focused.
Sharon, you've been covering the dog issue for some time. Can you break it down for us? How did this problem start? What are sort of the main factors in it? And you know, Peter just talked about some really hard ways that people live with this every day, but can you just sort of break down what this is like on a daily basis?
Yes, we started our Bridging Dallas's North-South Gap project back in 2007, and we started with a really intense listening tour. We talked to people, then we talked to more people, and then we talked to more people. And there's still so much we don't know about the southern half of our city, even those of us who live there, because it is so diverse. But one of the things we kept hearing again and again is the problem with the loose dogs. And that was sort of surprising because you kind of think, well, there's pockets of poverty and there's not enough economic development. But the dogs, the loose dogs, the fact that this is something that would never be allowed in the northern half of the city is really a very powerful symbol of what it's like to live in southern Dallas, what it's like to not have equality in quality of life issues. And it's something that affects both the dogs and, more importantly, the residents there.
And what does it look like for people who don't live there, who aren't spending daily basis there, what does it look like on the streets?
Well, Tiffany can speak to this far better than I can, but every time I'm in Southern Dallas, whether it's in Pleasant Grove where I was recently, whether it was in Parkdale, I was in even North Oak Cliff just the other day, there are dogs that are just on the streets, and they fall into several categories. There are more people, I think, who believe it's fine for their dogs to run loose. There's also an issue related to income. I think a lot of people just can't afford to keep their fences fixed, and so their dogs get out. But there also are a large quantity of dogs that we call street dogs. They either were never owned, or they have been astray of their owners, or they're so casually owned that they just roam loose. And one of the most horrible examples are people who leave their homes and move elsewhere and just leave their dogs behind. Now, having said that, I think that the Southern Dallas Council members have done a great job of pointing out, like, you don't have a Katy Trail to run in Southern Dallas. You don't necessarily have some of the amenities. And what amenities you do have, even like in Crawford Park down in Pleasant Grove, are overrun with dogs. And so, as Council Member Young has pointed out, kids just walking to their after-school programs are at risk. People getting out of their cars to go to church are at risk.
Now, one of the biggest complaints we hear from residents there is that they call the city and nothing is done about it. They call, they say there's been a delay. And so before we get to Council Member Young to hear from her perspective from the representative, let's hear from one of the people who live in that area about what she feels the city's response has been.
It took someone's life for them to get really involved. Because I have called several times to the city in reference to these dogs, and they would tell me 3 to 5 working days before someone come out. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me?
So, Councilmember Young, what has been the impact on the people in your district, the people that you represent, on this dog problem, and why have you so adamantly called for reform at the city?
Well, I will tell you the impact has been tremendous, but a long lines of negativity. And Ms. Grigsby has done a great job of highlighting just the impact it's had on quality of life. You know, I have lived in the southern half of the city most all of my life, and it's something that, as we've all said, it's an issue that dates back decades. And, you know, as I said in our Quality of Life Committee meeting yesterday, it, I truly believe, it is because of years of being ignored, communities that have ignored. And you've had years of the city and others, you know, and it's just very frustrating. And we want to be supportive and inclusive of all, but it's just very frustrating. You know, and I know Ms. Pimko is there with you, but the animal advocates, their voices are so very loud that it often drowns out the voices of our young people that can't walk to school, our seniors who my office constantly hears from, that can't even get their mail. So you're talking Social Security checks that can't be delivered because the dogs are there, and postmen and postwomen don't deliver mail. You have to find out where the station is, and you have to go and pick your mail up. So the impact has just been huge in terms of truly bringing down the quality of life. Just Memorial Day, we had a pit bull and a German Shepherd running in my front yard, and I eventually found out that it was my neighbors across the street, and the dog did, in fact, bite another neighbor. And so this happens everywhere. You know, we have pockets throughout the city, but specifically in the southern half of the city where the problem has just been ignored for too long, and we are just saying it is time out. It's time out for excuses. It's time out for passing the buck. We need to call out the problem for exactly what it is and deal with it, whatever that looks like.
Right, right. And we at the Dallas Morning News did an analysis of the most serious dog bite calls to 911 through January January through mid-May. And it's worth pointing out that we found that almost 8 in 10 of the most serious dog bites happen in neighborhoods with below average household incomes. And close to 75% of the victims were Black or Latino. And, you know, that's exactly what happened in Miss Brown. That's what happened to several of the other dog bite victims I've talked to. They are almost always low-income neighborhoods and minority victims. And that's goes back to your point, Sharon, that you said this would not be tolerated if it was happening in North Dallas.
Absolutely. I do want to highlight that this has been going on way longer than the Dallas Morning News or any of the TV stations have been covering it. I mean, this is a decades scourge that various council members have in the past tried to deal with, have tried to get attention to, and I think that because they don't have the loudest voices or maybe the most influential voices, that things were just rocked along.
Hello, City of Dallas.
That was an animal control officer out on the streets of Dallas looking for dogs to pick up and citations to issue. We know that experts say that enforcing dog laws, specifically spay and neuter laws, is a huge part of the solution. Peter, as head of the Animal Advisory Commission, what have you seen, what have you been advocating for in terms of solution to this problem?
Before I answer that, I do want to say that while the problem has been going on for decades, and there are a lot of things that the city needs to be doing to make it better, I do want to make sure that we acknowledge the fact that there are a lot of very hardworking animal control officers out there that are doing the hand-to-hand combat on the ground. And I don't want in the very legitimate criticisms of our policies and our practices to overlook the fact that there are dozens of people who spend their entire days trying to address this issue. But I think that it goes the solution to the problem, I think, is going to be everything from policy to budgeting, funding to strategy to cooperation with folks in the community who are passionate about this issue. And that's why we got a consulting firm involved who could really look at the problem holistically, the whole community, and also look to other cities to see what's worked there. Because I forget who said it, I think it was Council Member Young said, this is a decades-old problem. You can go back and read articles from the 70s about it, and we've just never found the right solution. And so we want to look at this holistically. I think that a lot of great ideas came out of the quality of life meeting yesterday. I mean, two really important things came out of that meeting, and the Morning News editorialized about it today. One was we've got a fundamental, I think, structural problem in that there isn't one point of accountability for the issue, and it is
And that's because you've got animal services housed under code compliance. So if you're not familiar with the city structure, that's you've got Dallas Animal Services code compliance and reports all the way up to the city council.
It does. The animal services is buried deep within the bureaucracy, but it's more than that. It also there's so many different agencies that are tasked with different aspects of the issue. It's hard to coordinate. So we need to figure out a better governance structure.
And that's something that BCG, you actually raised a lot of money, private funds, to hire BCG, Boston Consulting Group, which is a well-known, nationally recognized consulting firm to come in. Well, actually, it's the Dallas office, so they're right. Already here, but they're underway doing their study.
They are, and I'm hopeful about that. They're in the fact-finding point right now. But I think the other issue that really came out yesterday was enforcement. So right now, writing a citation is considered enforcement. Well, we learned from the Antoinette Brown case that the owners of those dogs had gotten multiple citations.
Right.
And they were never paid. They were ignored. So who cares? It's not real enforcement.
Neighbors had actually called at least 11 times about the owners of those dogs, and multiple different dogs came in and out of that household. But, you know, that gets back to what the resident was saying about how, you know, you call and nothing's done. And actually, in this case, something was done, but it wasn't enough. And so, Tiffany, I know that you've been calling on your fellow council members and the city to do more. What are your thoughts in terms of enforcement and in terms of what the city's current plan is?
Well, you know, I'm hopeful, but we know, as we learned yesterday, just as Mr. Brodsky just said, that enforcement is lacking, and we need stronger enforcement. And really what I continue to talk about not only in District 7, but throughout this city, is that we've got to engage more and we need to educate more. And so that is what I will continue to endeavor to do, making sure that we are educating our constituents, making sure that we are engaging folks, you know, and that people are adhering to the rules, I hope, a little bit more. And so as we looked at, you know, all of the suggestions on yesterday, and we will continue to deal with and grapple and hear from others as to what it is, you know, we need to be doing, I truly believe, you know, and I continue to be frustrated with the 311 system, and several of my colleagues also, you know, have really called for an overhaul in how we deal with the dog calls and how we deal with what's going on with the loose animals, whether they be loose owned. And I do understand, as we continue to hear, that it is truly a loose owned problem. But at the end of the day, Sarah, at the end of the day, when Johnny or Sarah or any young kid is walking to and from school, they do not know that their dog is owned by someone. All they know is that they are in fear of their lives, just as we just heard Ms. Temko say she was while she was on a rescue mission. And at the end of the day, that is why the constituents of District 7 elected me, to make sure that we have better quality of life. And so that is what I will remain committed to. And in doing that, making sure that we are reaching across the aisle, reaching across the horseshoe, and working with all of my colleagues. Even one of my colleagues suggested, and I support her on that, a neighborhood exchange, if you will, where council members and others spend a day in the life of, okay, and see how long they would last in these communities that constituents in the South have to live in on a day-to-day basis. See how long they would last trying to run around this neighborhood when it's very different than running around White Rock or Katy Trail. Just spend a day, just a day, and see how long they would last.
We'll stay tuned. If that happens, let me know. We'd like to cover that. And so, you know, like you guys have pointed out, it has been, this problem has been going on for a long time, but it also arguably has been getting worse recently. There's some evidence to show that the problem has been getting worse. Sharon, just very briefly, how long do you think citizens should be expected to wait before they start seeing real results? I know it takes time, but what is reasonable or realistic?
I think that a lot is really on the BCG study. I think that there is so much dysfunction within the animal services operation, and that's bigger than Dallas Animal Services. I think that my hope, the hope of the Morning News that's been working on this so hard editorially, is that we have those results to share with the City Council by August or September, that the council moves swiftly to decide how to restructure this operation, and that we see real change before year's end. My concern, and when I say my, I'm speaking on behalf of the editorial department, is that the council tried to fix this last fall, and they had a lot of good energy behind that. That didn't happen, and we've got to get it fixed this time. I have no doubt the council wants to get it fixed, but as Peter pointed out, it is a bureaucratic morass, and straightening that out is just going to take all of our will, and none of us can sit back and think, okay, it's in the process of being fixed.
Can I add one thing? It's going to take, you're not going to implement a long-term solution in the short term, but I think if the citizens, it's not enough, but if the citizens who are living with this problem got the very clear message through increased presence, increased responses, changed rhetoric, that their problems are being heard, they're being taken seriously, they're being addressed, I think that would at least begin the process of rebuilding some trust so that long-term solutions could be implemented. And I'm hopeful that that is happening.
And I do want to say that although I'm an animal advocate, This solution is going to come from the community, and animal advocates are anxious, willing, and ready to work with the community to empower them to solve the problem. If DAS isn't going to step up, if the city isn't going to step up, we cannot wait until policy changes. We cannot wait until the city decides to get their act together on enforcement. We need protection now in the city. If DAS can't do it, then citizens need to do it. And animal advocates can help with that. So we have a voice at the city. I'm proud of the work that we've done. I'm proud of the fact that we've developed good working relationships with the city and that we have been heard. But what we've been saying is pick up the dogs. And we've been saying that not just for the dogs, but for the citizens. So I did want to take a moment to talk about the initiative of President Michael Sorrell at Paulquin College, who has brought together the rescue community. And we have developed a 4-point plan for addressing the loose dog problem. Actually, the whole mission is to reduce the loose dog issue in southern Dallas. And we'll do that through outreach and education and specifically empowering the citizens.
And how can someone join that group if they want to?
We have there's an email, sdai@pq.edu. I think is what it is.
PQC
for Paulquin College. And they can email, and we will respond and let you know. The next meeting is going to be on the 22nd at Paulquin at 7 p.m. And we are working with rescuers to determine what's the best solution for picking up the lost dogs. We're working with wellness, working with SPCA. We're working on education. We're working at bringing spay-neuter to the people of southern Dallas instead of them having to go outside of their region to get services. There's a whole host of, you know, it's probably a whole nother show to talk about all the different approaches. But one of the things that I want to be very clear about is even this amazing initiative that citizens are working on will not work without enforcement. We can clean up the dogs. We can educate. We can provide resources. But unless there's enforcement, it's a lost cause. We'll be at the exact same place as we are right now this time next year.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you,
Sarah.
Next up, the latest Hashing It Out with editorial writer Mike Hashimoto. Thanks to our guests, Sharon Grigsby, Peter Brodsky, Stephanie Timko, and Tiffany Young. Thanks also to our sound engineer and producer, Tommy Noel. Stay up to date with all the latest dog and crime news at dallasnews.com. You can also like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. We're at Texas Crimecast. I'm Sarah Mervosh. Thanks for listening and stay safe out there. Now we drop the mic.
Pause for a moment and consider this. In America's ninth largest city, the anchor of the fourth largest metropolitan area, people in some parts of town can't go outside without fear of being eaten alive by dogs. Dallas has long aspired to greatness, longer than any of us have been alive. Its leaders have used the term world-class so often, some cynics mock them for it. A city where grandmothers keep big sticks nearby just to sit on the front porch is not great. Wishing doesn't make it so. The Dallas Morning News editorial board has written about this sorry situation for years. The response from City Hall has been a flow of words, some even sincere. But action? 6 weeks since a homeless woman was mauled to death by roaming dogs, we're still talking. Sadly, this is par for the course for our big city government. The newspaper has called for the removal of Jody Jones, manager of Dallas Animal Services. Fair or not, the loose dog problem has multiplied on her watch. And even that logical step, it seems, is just too hard. Maybe with another 6 weeks of verbiage, city leaders might conclude that a focused effort to round up every loose dog possible and put down the ones they must might actually make Dallas safer. This comes with a cost, of course, and those leaders might consider whether anything else they do really matters if the city's people do not feel safe leaving their homes.